You're listening to RADV Risk Mitigation, Audit Preparation, and Lessons Learned, presented by Lindsay Schramm, Health First Health Plans, Karen Jensen, CPC, Gunderson Health Plan, and moderated by Shane Keith from Pulse 8. This session was presented at the February 2017 Risk Adjustment Value Visit.
We have Shane from Pulse 8, which really excited. You guys heard a tiny little bit about his credentials and his experience on the RADV side, so really thrilled to have that experience moderating our discussion today. And then we also have with us Karen coming back to the stage from Gunderson and Lindsay from Health First. Now, Lindsay, correct me, Health First has had the dubious honor of participating in every RADV. Okay, so the last one you didn't do. All right, so almost every RADV known to man, Health First has done it. And then Gunderson has done at least one. I think you said
We've actually did two of two. The contract level.
All right, so we have the real-world experience from two health plans, and then we have the nice breadth of experience from Shane's perspective. And I know they don't have slides today, so it's open discussion.
So, Kristen, or Lindsay, I don't think your mic is on.
Am I on now?
Yeah.
Okay.
As was mentioned, I'm Shane from Pulse 8. My previous experience, I was at a health plan for about 5 years, and I was in charge of all of the RADV audits and risk mitigation tactics, both Medicare and commercial. So if you were on the RegTap calls, you may have heard my voice. I ask questions almost every week. So I definitely would echo that. If you haven't been to RegTap.info, get yourself over there. When I was at the health plan, we went through the national audits where a handful of members were selected from. We had two contracts. And then we went through the payment year 2011 targeted 201 sample. I know people call it a lot of different things, but the RADV that then translates into your financial extrapolation that you have to pay back. So this is going to be just kind of, we talked and more of an informal panel discussion. We're going to talk about our experiences, specifically kind of in regards to preparation, the chart retrieval process, the coding, any of the financial analysis that was done, lessons learned, and, of course, as always, feel free to ask questions throughout. I know that we're right before lunch, and I know that I would be more than happy to meet with people afterwards and discuss in further detail, some of the things. So I guess to get started, if you both want to start and talk about what your preparation was, mainly who was on the internal team? Did you have an external contract in place?
Okay, so we participated in the 2007 and the 2012. The 2007 was the first RADV after the pilot. At that time, I had just started into the department, and it was just me. We were just starting a risk adjustment program, and I didn't know anything about it, and then we get the letter. Funny story, I actually went to an ICE conference, and I learned all about the RADV audits at that time, as it was pretty new to me, and we came home, and that Monday there was a letter that we had been notified. And if we went to that conference, we probably wouldn't have even known what this was all about. So it was, it was like, okay, jumped right into it. So as I said before, so the 2007 one, it was just me. The 2012, we had added one more analyst to the department, so then there was two of us. We have 15,000 members in our Medicare Advantage program, and we have two states. We have Wisconsin and Minnesota. We've had a handful of the national RADVs. In fact, today is the kickoff for the national RADV, and we were selected for this one. I don't know if anybody else is. The call's today, so hopefully everyone has staff back home that's listening in. So, and we can all find out tonight how many we have, right? We're all waiting to hear. So for preparation, for the first one, we were notified, but it took them about a year to get it kicked off. So it was brand new, and they kept delaying it And it actually was a total year from the day we were notified till the day it started. We worked with our HIM department since we're integrated with the system. Back then, it was all paper charts. We weren't no access to electronic medical records, so we had to. We designed a system, worked really closely with them so that they would copy the charts and put them in folders for us so that we could get access to them electronically. But now that we have electronic medical record, the newest one, we were just able to go right into the medical record system and get what we needed. So it's come a long way, actually. If you did one of the prior ones to one of the to the recent ones, it changed a lot.
Oh, and I'll go next. So, it is. Can you hear me? Okay. Do I need to? Okay. Maybe my hair's in the way. So we have been selected. We have gone through the CY 2007, and then along with that, the medical record dispute process, and also the CY 11, and then all of the national RADVs. So really, most of it was myself and Michelle. Probably for the contract level, we had one other person helping us at the time. And so we really spearheaded that RADV, and we also have access to our medical group's EMR, which definitely helps. So our process after getting the list is really to go through everything that we have access to first. Michelle built a wonderful spreadsheet that I think we've shared with the group in the past, where we were able to track each HCC and if it could be validated and where, and did it, you know, validate it? Did you find another HCC? Was it higher in the hierarchy? Was it lower? Because with those additional HCCs, that mattered. So we did a lot of tracking in that shared spreadsheet. And after that, we were also requesting the medical records at the same time for all of our independent paper providers. So that's really a kind of our process going forward.
Is that available on the Health Plan Alliance, that thing that Michelle
we've
created?
We've sent that before. Correct.
Okay.
Yes, I can resend the link. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry, I don't know when to ask it, so I'm just going to ask it now.
Sure.
So what is the contract level? What calendar year are they in the process of doing right now? Does anybody know that?
2011 forward.
So 2011, 2011 forward.
2012, 2013. So 2011 started in... they selected the contracts, and that was the first year that the payment extrapolation was taking effect. So they selected the contracts for that audit in November of 2013, and I left the health plan in December of last year, and we still didn't have the results for 2011. They selected for 2012. There was published on CMS, they published the 2011 selected contracts and the 2012 selected contracts, and I believe I had heard from folks that 2013 had been selected. But to my knowledge, they haven't released any results.
Now, you said those are posted on CMS website?
So if you were to go into cms.gov, Medicare, risk adjustment, I always just Google the RADV, and it's one of the links that pops up. And there's a... informational thing that they had posted saying here was the 2007 audit results and the financial implications associated with that one. And that was before, so I'm not sure if everyone's familiarity, and again, we don't have too much time, so I'd be happy to talk about it more. But the methodology as it stood for the 2011 forward audits was published in February of 2012. So that wasn't fully in place for the 2007 audits. So it's not like an apples-to-apples comparison from the financial implications from those audits that are posted. But they list the contracts, and then they say for 2011, these are the 30 contracts they selected. For 2012, these are the 30 contracts they selected.
And real quick, the national one that you guys said letter was today is for what calendar year?
2015.
Because they just closed it.
Yeah.
Right.
Anybody, huh?
So one of the things... that I would just add before we wrap up preparation is I think as we evolve realized through audit processes is you prepare and then they change. And that was, I think, definitely the experience with the 2011 audit is we had a lot prepared that we could then modify, but when they came out with these meetings, again, a really important reason to have people on the meetings taking detailed notes is they say, well, this is how we want to receive the medical records. This is, you know, how you're going to get credit for additional HCCs, which was a whole fun process. So it's definitely important to have the right people identified. We had our risk adjustment department is at that time mainly just actuarial folks, and we worked with the with medical record coders, and realized that there is such a synergy, I guess, that between the two areas, they're so related that having that collaboration between the two departments is crucial to fully, you know, understand what's in the medical record, how does that correspond to HCCs, and then how does that correspond to what we're going to have to book for an accrual to say this is what we're going to pay when we get the results and pay. So the next thing we have up there is chart retrieval. So that's kind of the first thing that starts when you're selected for the one of the first things is that you need to get the charts to send to CMS so they can validate them and say, yes, it has this HCC, no, it doesn't. So if you want to speak about, maybe we'll start with Lindsay first.
Yeah, so as I said before, we do have access to our medical group's EMR, which was about 50% of the membership, roughly. So we would start there with actually reviewing, but kind of at the same time, we're getting all the paper chart requests out. We were trying to keep our team. There was a team at the time, probably about 8 of us, maybe 10 of us, in the risk adjustment department. They were also focused on doing, you know, our normal day-to-day internal chart reviews because we do all of our chart reviews in-house. So we were trying to keep them out of the RADV so they could focus on the deadlines that they were working. But we did have to bring them in here and there to help us with, you know, offices that were requesting us to come in, things like that. If we were just getting overwhelmed with everything we were doing, we did have our team in-house to help us with that retrieval if needed.
So we did our own chart retrieval. We have the advantage of the electronic medical records. So we also would audit as we're looking at the medical records, and we would actually then select a large number of them that we thought that would pass, and then we would go through and do our initial our coding after we did that. It was just the two of us, so actually all of our rest of our work, and except for the bare necessities, got done. We had to focus 100% of our time on this. And so it was a really rough year for us because we had the audit that started December 2015. It ended in May of 16 for us, for the RADV, and then July 1st started the commercial, the exchange audit. So the only thing we got done last year was these audits, and the rest of our chart reviews stunk last year because all we did was we spent the majority of our whole year on these audits. So it took a lot of our time. But everybody else, we did our own work. We didn't vendor it out, did all our own chart retrieval. So
we were not as integrated, and we didn't have access to EMRs as it sounds that you had. So yeah. My experience was a little bit different in the issues with getting the medical records. When we had EMRs, one of the nice things is the attestations were less likely to be needed.
Very true.
So if you can maybe talk about any times, any issues that you had with attestations or hardships that you may have had to request.
We didn't have any hardships. I don't even know if we had any attestations that we were even required for this last one. I know the very first RADV audit was all paper medical records, and we had a little problem with signatures. yeah, and so we had a large number of attestations that we had to get for our physicians for those. And we were actually just excited that they were going to allow attestations at that point, because when we started looking at those, that went back to 2006 dates of service, and providers were not into as stringent as they are now and requiring those signatures. So we did. So the attestations was just not an issue for us this year.
We had to get a lot of attestations for this last RADV. Most of it was was fine to get. It was just time-consuming to go out, go to the provider, explain everything. Some providers were hesitant because the date of service was so long ago. They would say, well, I don't remember this date of service. I don't want to sign this. And so it was just explaining the process. And, you know, this, I mean, this is your record. This is your signature. It's just not valid. So we just need you to attest that this is your signature from this date of service. So that was just time consuming. We did have to recruit our internal team to help us go out there and get those. We had some, I remember one of our associates going to a provider that had retired. She went to his house and he signed it. She was like, we called her the bulldog. She was fantastic. And we did have one that was traveling out of the country and he was here for 2 weeks and we grabbed him at that 2 week period and got that. So it was just really time consuming to chase and get these attestations. One provider, I will say, was in jail. We were not able to get that one. That we kind of drew the line on that one. Yeah. That one we kind of said, that's a wash. We're going to submit it and see if they take that signature. But yes, those attestations were very, very time consuming to get.
I just have a quick question. And we don't need to go into it now, but if someone is doing this, I'd love to sit with them at lunch. So at the government program's value visit a few years ago, and I can't remember her name, she was from a vendor, but she talked about a process where you built an audit database as you were doing your retrospective chart reviews and flagging best medical records, and how much at the plan that she used to be at before she went to the vendor that really helped them on RADV already know, have the records in-house and know the best medical record that met all of that. So that is sort of a long-term goal for my team, is building out a database. But if anybody is sort of doing that on retrospective chart review, flagging for best medical record, keeping the records in-house so you already have a resource to go to and may not have to go back and refetch them, I'd love to talk to you about how you implemented that.
So one thing that we do at Health First is not necessarily flagging for best chart, but when we get our list from CMS of our suspect list, the 201 members, we do get a report and we know exactly everywhere that that HCC was documented. So what we look at is if it was documented internally, that's kind of our first go-to. And we know we have that chart in our system. And so those we kind of knock out off the bat. We know if that was internally, then that's a good record. We hold our analysts to a 98% accuracy rate. So if it was submitted internally, we know that's a good one. If it was submitted one time on a claim, we know that's going to be a struggle.
How do you capture that, Lindsay?
That is through a report through our vendor that we use.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that as well. The risk mitigation into that when you're doing retrospective chart reviews, knowing, I think RADV is on a lot of people's minds. It's constantly been on my mind because that's what, I'm day-to-day was extremely involved in. Making sure that you aren't submitting, you know, false data, because it may be a small impact, or if you were to, when you add an HCC, if it's $2,000, $3,000 for that year, that's great, but then extrapolate it to your contract. If you have, you know, tens of thousands of members, each one of those HCCs, the number just gets astronomical. So you really want to make sure that you're comfortable with the data that you're submitting, making sure that it's keeping all things in mind when you're doing that. So we talked a little bit about the time-consuming. A lot of these processes have been on, you know, both the IVA before and with the MA RADV. I know from 2011, as I was mentioning, those who have gone through it or have heard stories, they had technical issues where their central data abstraction tool was down for a month, then like 3 months, then a year. And so we had a lot of time to really hammer out the details. Moving forward, I guess with the 2012, I'm curious about the 2012 audit and moving forward, what roadblocks you foresee with having a theoretically scheduled time frame of 90 days, 120 days, mm-hmm. that you have to complete the audit in.
So you had the delay then?
We did.
Oh, okay.
We had the delay.
Okay,
yes.
So I had the year after 2012. Okay. We had no delays, we were able to get it done in enough time, but it is tough. There's not as much volume as the commercial. You know, like when we had submitted 1,500 medical records. You know, it's so limited to how many. We had enough time. But it could be very challenging if you're trying to retrieve these charts that are off-site.
Yeah, I just think moving forward, if we don't have that extension, it's really going to be really letting our leadership know and letting, you know, our organization know that whoever's focusing on that RADV needs to focus on that 100%.
I was just going to say that. That's all we could do.
Exactly. That's really, I think, where, you know, we feel torn is where all of us are always working so many different projects, and I don't think that we would really have that opportunity. It would be a 100% focus on that to get it completed in time, for sure.
Right. I would definitely point people, there's resources out there papers by CMS and the specifically what comes to mind is the GAO report. They came out and said to CMS or to everyone, really, that they have not been doing a good job at, you know, keeping up with these audits, getting them completed in a timely manner to get that overpayment. You know, we see the estimated, is it $15 billion or however much, a lot of money that is potentially being overpaid. There is the idea that there's going to be an increased emphasis. I remember reading a figure, if it was in the GAO report or something referencing that report. I would, again, don't take me as the source for this, but that they have said they have the capacity to complete 80 contract audits in a year. That has not been the experience from what we have seen and from what was written in that GAO report. But I would definitely advise people to go and read that report. I thought it had a lot of good information and helps for strategy planning forward.
I just have one more thing to add. Michelle just reminded me of one more thing that I think will help us in the future with that, is that we are able to review 100% of our membership. So having that knowledge already and having all that data already, I think will make it that much quicker, especially for the chart retrieval, for everything like that. We will have that. So when it gets... You know, if we get selected, then we will have all that information.
That's great. So moving right along, the financial impact. So the results haven't been distributed that CMS has found as they've worked through their audit. You know, but I know that plans will, you know, want to know what is this, what are we going to get hit with? What's the extrapolated exposure? Where do we think they're going to come back with? So I don't know if you would like to talk about some of your processes.
Well, I can tell you that we actually do have our results from our 2007, and you probably do too, oh, yeah. Lindsay. If you're curious to see how we actually did, so I think that we're the only group that probably have results.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So we had 399 HCCs that we had to validate. They found 80 that were discrepant, and so we had an error rate of 20%. But then they awarded us 57 additional HCCs, which kind of offset it a little bit. And then they had 7 HCCs that they confirmed higher within the hierarchy. And so then our financial impact, it was not extrapolated, so it was just based on each of those members that they found the error on. So we lucked out in that year. I think that their coding was really lenient for us. I think that, you know, when we go to this coding work group and we're always talking about meat and everything like that, from what we found from our results, if it was listed in the assessment, they counted it. And they even took some of them off my problem list that I wouldn't have even expected them to have taken, and they did. So I don't know if they've gotten differently, and I mean, we don't have the results of our 2012. I don't know if they've changed their coding practices, but at least with that one, I would have to say that the results were pretty right on. There wasn't very many that I would even have appealed. I mean, we didn't officially appeal any. I thought it was fair.
Good job. I agree, and I don't have our specific numbers, yeah. but after going through the dispute process, I do remember us disputing a very small number. We went through every single yeah. one, tried to find something, but the ones that failed or that were discrepant were validly discrepant. They just mm-hmm. were either an error in coding, you know.
Yep, I agree too.
Things like that. We do use that history of RADVs, and that's how we educate our team internally. And with our auditors, we always kind of say, you know, you have to have your RADV hat on. Maybe we won't code it internally, but we think it'll pass the RADV. So we always kind of have that talk internally. And I think we only disputed about 13, I think we disputed. And then they agreed with our disputes for half of those.
Good. And I know we actually did a spreadsheet like Lindsay did, and we put pass, fail, and questionable. And I don't know about you, but so we received our results 3 years later, and I was brand new to risk adjustment. And when I looked back at the results, the ones that I had said pass, and I'm like, I was 3 years smarter, and I was like, there was a lot of those, like, why did I think that that would pass? Because I learned so much more in that period of time,
yeah.
and then I was like, that's why I think the results were so well, is like, yep, that really wouldn't pass. So, yeah, it was quite a learning experience.
Absolutely. A lot of the ones that we would mark maybes or questionable yep. are the ones that we would never code that, but we think CMS might actually accept it.
And I bet you found that, and I think they were accepted, most of those.
Yeah.
I think they were
yeah.
too, yeah, because of the, yep.
Before you received those results, did you have any interim projections for what the financial value was going to be of those?
Right. So what we did is, and all we could do is give our actuarial, our pass, fail, and questionable lists of members and HCCs, and then they kind of did a preliminary analysis based on what they think that it would be, based on what we think we found.
Right.
It's only as good as our data that we felt passed or failed. And so, yeah, that's how our process is.
Yeah, we basically did the same thing.
Yep.
We had that spreadsheet that tracked everything. So then we shared that with our vendor for them to give us an estimate, and they gave us, you know, a low and a high, and then also with our actuarial firm as well.
Great. We could go in depth in a lot of these things, and I'm going to resist the urge to. One thing that I would mention with the financial extrapolation is, if you haven't been involved with the RADV or in the details, it had started with a one best medical record that you would submit, and then for the updated methodology, you can submit 5 per HCC for a member. So if they have 3 HCCs, you can submit 15 charts. It doesn't have to be 5 for one specific HCC. It gets then rolled up to the member level. You have to then rank the charts for the member at a member HCC level. You can rank a chart for 2 HCCs, 1, all 3. And they only accept additional HCCs for a certain criteria that there was many conversation, so I'm not going to explain the criteria. I'd be happy to talk about it later. But that is that's something that's important and really can impact the financial value of what you're submitting. So you could have value there that you're submitting, but if you don't submit it in the proper manner, then you might not pick up those additional agencies.
That is probably the most difficult part of the whole audit, is that ranking and figuring out if you're the highest one has to have the additional HCC, and only if that one passes. So even if you have an HCC that you're not sure it's going to pass, but it has an additional, you better make that first, because then you can put that other one that you don't think is going to pass as your second, and then you have nothing to lose. You might gain that other one, but it's a whole strategy. And don't laugh, but the way we did our chart retrieval and coding is we did it old school. So we actually printed from our electronic medical records. We printed them on paper, and then we used sticky notes. And we put the HCC, and this is going to be number one, and this one's going to be number two, and we put flags on it and everything because you can't mark them up. And then we would shuffle, and we'd say, well, if I do this one, then I'll change our mind here. And that's what worked for us, so that we could come up with a packet and stack them how we wanted them to go. And me and my other coder, we would switch off, and she'd review them after I reviewed them, and then we would meet to figure out your prioritizing and things like that. So I didn't know how I would do that electronically. If I had 25 notes saved in PDFs, I just didn't know how I was going to this one and then that one.
Yep. So basically, okay. So just in my mind, so I get this clear. So you're going through the RADV, and let's say you cannot support the HCC that was there, but yeah. you do happen to see another DIAG that will link to an HCC. Do you automatically give them that record, you know, just to...
You're out of luck. If you can't validate the HCC, you don't get the additional.
Oh, okay. Is that the way it works? Okay.
Yeah, that's the way it works. Yeah, that's what it is now. Yeah. So if you have a maybe,
yeah.
put that first.
Put the maybe.
And then your second one, is, yeah, if it's stronger. It's a whole
So
thing.
Put a maybe and then put the second chart that has,
yes.
okay.
That doesn't have the additional. So he says if they go with the maybe, you'll get that additional.
Okay.
And then, but if they don't, at least your second one's going to pass.
No, it's good to yeah, know the strategy
is.
Here.
But it takes, you know, I think that was the biggest problem is going into this is how do they do this? Because this was new. You didn't do anything like that. In the first audit, you had one record. You had to capture it in only one. And so there you're trying to figure out your best. So at least now I have five, but now they put this other twist in there.
So does your health plan put you out as a consultant for other people that are getting RADVs?
There you go. I'll just give me my sticky notes, and I'll figure them out.
All right, so that kind of talks about the financial impact. Lessons learned. One of the things that I think I'm going to sneak it in quick, is so for the 2007 audit, you went through the appeals process.
Yep.
Right? If you could talk just briefly about how you prepared for the appeals process, because that also, if when you get the results back from CMS and they don't align with what you have or what you need to have validated, you know, going to them to say, this is not, we don't agree and we don't want to pay for that HCC. So if you could talk about that.
So you get a preliminary audit report. It took Lindsay and I 3 years to get that, and they give you a nice spreadsheet, and they give you your outcomes with your discrepancies and your confirmed and which ones are higher. And then after that, you can. It's not actually the appeal process, but it's you can indicate which ones that you do not feel met the discrepancy. And of course they only certain ones are ones that you can discrepant. If it's one that you didn't submit a medical record, you can't
yes.
appeal that one.
Yes.
Yep. And then we only submitted about we had five that we did a dispute on, and one was overturned. And the other four the only reason why I did five was because I only had really one that, and I thought, well, I had to put a few maybes in there, so I did five. I knew the other four weren't going to, but I thought I would try. And then of those remaining four that didn't, then you can do an appeal process. And we did not appeal ours.
Yeah, we didn't appeal any either. Yep. The one kicker for it was you could not submit any other medical records. So you had to write your dispute based on the medical record that was submitted.
Right.
So we had some where we were like, what? We just submitted the wrong one.
And remember, at this time, we only could submit one note with this.
Yeah, so you had to have, and they did give you a format, and you had to write three paragraphs, and they told you basically exactly what to include in each paragraph. So you had to have a very good dispute in order to get that
right.
overturned.
And then when you did that dispute, they came back. I thought they came back in a paragraphs, and they were very specific as to, and with coding guidelines, why it would not meet. Much more than the IVA that just said, nope, doesn't pass.
Yes. And it was actually very helpful. We used
was.
That moving forward, yes.
Yep.
A key quick thing to note is the ranking and the five charts that is specific to Medicare. You know, for, well, everyone that has an ACA plan knows that you can submit all of the records that you have. So
we participated in the 2012 also.
Okay.
So I'm just curious on the 2011, have you gotten their response yet?
No,
even
we haven't
for that one?
It. That was submitted May of 15, correct? And we have not received any feedback.
Okay. And the only other thing I would add that our plan decided to do, and of course they waited months to decide this, but We brought in an outside consultant firm to take our what we came up with. We then sent to them to have them look at what we had decided. And one, they helped us with some of that and then also helped our leadership agree with what we were coming up with. And so we feel they'll be available for us to help with appeals or, you know, to look at that when it comes back. Plus, they could price it.
Great. Last thing on appeals and then another quick thing on financial impact. When you get your preliminary results, so when 2011 gets wrapped up eventually, you get those results and then you start the appeals process. It could take another 6 months to a year to actually have the financial implication occur. If you look into the regulation, there's certain guidelines about you have when you get your results, you have 60 days to submit appeals. Then the CMS has 60 days to 60 days or 90 days to respond, and then you can go to a second level. And then until everything is finalized, that is when the fee or whatever you want to call it would occur. So you have an even longer process as you're working through that. The other main component that has been an extreme headache for everyone that has gone with the contract audits is the fee-for-service adjuster that is a thing that is going to be applied, and that's basically the extent of what we know. Risk adjustment being based on fee-for-service claims data rather than Medicare Advantage medical record documentation. So there's differences between the model and what is the true cost, and so they're trying to figure out what the error rate inherent in the fee for service data that is then the error rate within the model, so they can adjust your financial extrapolation by a certain amount, whether it's a percentage or a dollar amount based on your total extrapolated exposure. That's still to be unknown. So you can have huge ranges of what you're trying to predict. This is going to be our fee, but the fee for service adjuster that's going to be applied, it could be lower. This could be an upper. This is most likely an upper bound. But how much lower is that going to be? And that could be millions of dollars. So I get we're just past 12:15, so want to wrap it up with some, maybe the top lessons learned that you would take from RADV. There's probably a lot, but
I think for me, and I'll look to Michelle, she went through this with me, so feel free to jump in. When we were going through our EMR system, we were taking notes and saying, okay, well, this date of service had this, and then this was a better date of service here. And I think going back, I would go ahead and if it validates at HCC, I would extract it out and put it in a folder because I found myself going back and forth to be like, well, wait, was that one better or was this one better? And then I would have to go back into the EMR and find that date of service. So we didn't want to take the time to extract what we didn't need, but looking back, we maybe should have done that at the beginning. Do you have any other lessons learned? She concurs.
I guess one of our lessons learned and what we decided to do after we had our first RADV audit is we decided it was really important to educate our providers. And seeing since we're an integrated system, we went full force in a project to do that. So we took and flagged all of the diagnosis codes that have HCCs associated with them, and we provided education to the provider. So actually what we did is our physicians provided the education for us. We met and we gave them PowerPoints, and they became very knowledgeable on HCC and risk adjustment. And in order for the physicians to be receptive on it, it needed to come from one of them. So our physicians, we had a team of them, and they educated all the providers and really got them on board on risk adjustment and coding and everything. So what they do now is we flag them in Epic system, which ones have HCCs, and if they're in the problem list and there's an HCC there, they know that they're supposed to assess that and address that with the patient and get that coded. We found our actuary came back, and I think we had a 25% increase that year from when they started doing that. So it really paid off.
Okay, when you're doing that with your providers, I believe it really does help get some good documentation. But does CMS come back and look at that and say you're coaching the providers on what to put in as a diagnosis to support it, the payment?
All we're doing is flagging the eight ones that have HCCs on it. That's
So it's perfectly fine.
Oh, it's perfectly fine, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure what CMS thought on the matter.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, that's totally fine.
So I was on a webinar, and I'm so sorry, my brain is like fried today. I can't remember what vendor was doing it, but it was really tying some of the hooks related to the False Claims Act and RADV and all this fun stuff and the exposures that plans have. And one of the takeaways that the presenter had mentioned was taking a look at your provider contracts going forward to have the providers have some skin in the game so that when you do get hit with these large extrapolation penalties, that your providers have to ante up and own that, especially if it is improper documentation that caused it. So just curious if anybody has started those conversations about putting language in their provider contracts to make the providers accountable when you can't substantiate HCCs.
It's a prior life, but we were moving in that direction, and we had initiated that process specifically where we had value-based arrangements. We weren't an integrated network, but where we were asking them to perform certain capabilities and putting them at risk, we wanted to avoid the opportunity for, you know, someone getting a little overexcited and overcoding and things of that nature. So there was some language crafted around it. I'll tell you, we were very early and we were learning a lot about how to deal with that language from a legal perspective and how much pushback we could get. So it's a very sensitive subject. I think before I left that health plan experience, we probably had two folks that had actually signed up and agreed to it. And what we realized is it actually pushed back the maturation of those value-based arrangements because of their concern, so to speak. But I was with a large plan in the Florida market, and there was some significant risk exposure already from a fraud standpoint. So that was driving some of that.
Can I get your business card?
Yeah, you can have it. Yeah, absolutely.
So real quick, Jess, we tried. And contracted services said we're not opening that Pandora's box. So.
Good to know.
And that is something
I'm going to get that response. But, yeah.
We have been in discussions about that for quite a while, but we're moving that way, but we don't have anything yet. We're in hopes to, I should say.
Great. Thank you, panel. Thank you very much.